We're holding on page 48 in Sanhedrin, about the middle of the page, middle of Os Nun Aleph. We were learning last time, the Gemara was going through and darshaning of Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which the Gemara had explained that metaphorically it describes the Sanhedrin. Shtorei Hagan HaSahar, we said your navel is like a round basin, Al Yechzer HaMozeg, there should never be lacking in it, well-mixed wine. Bitnech Aremas Chitin, your stomach is like a heap of wheat, Suga Bashishanin, hedged around with roses. So the Gemara had explained that the first half of the Pasuk is talking about the Sanhedrin, which protects the whole Jewish people and sits in the middle of the world, and they sit in a semicircle. Then we said they're like a heap of wheat in the sense that everybody needs wheat in the same way everybody benefits from the teachings of the Sanhedrin. And the Suga Bashishanin means even the Chachamim make for us Zeris, and they're easy to break through, as easy as a hedge of roses might be. Nevertheless, we hold ourselves back, and we're not over on it. And we mentioned that, for example, a husband, as his wife tells him she's nida, then he'll stay away despite the fact there's nobody policing them, there's nobody forcing them, there's nobody in their house to make sure that they're actually keeping it. But nevertheless, they keep it. This is Suga Bashishani. I've mentioned before, actually, in that connection, I've mentioned in this shir, an interesting point related to that I once read years back. Some 60 years ago, they were trying to do a survey, the sociologists were trying to do a survey, how many frum Jews are there in America? This was in the 1960s. So the question is, how do you determine who's frum? I mean, different people are careful and unfortunately sometimes careless with different mixes. So first they figured Shabbos. It's a very obvious public sign of whether a Yid is shrem or mitzvah. Then they thought it over, they discussed it with Rabbanim, I don't know how they came to the conclusion, and they decided that the more meaningful thing would be whether a couple keeps taras mishpacha. In the sense that they said, they published in their prospectus for this thing, that the idea is that a couple that's not committed to Torah and mitzvahs is going to say, wait a minute, this is our most private personal relationship. What are Hashem or rabbis or whatever doing interfering with it? It's our business, what we do in our bedroom. As opposed to a couple that's committed to a relationship with Hashem are going to say, on the contrary, this is our most private, personal, sacred relationship. How could Hashem not be a part of it? So then this relates to the Suga Bashishanim, that the true measure of a Yid is when you have something like that. There's only Shishanim, there's only roses. Is he going to trample them, or is he going to realize these are precious roses? We've got to leave them alone. So the Gemara continues, Rish Lakish Amar Mehacha. Rish Lakish says you have a different pasuk that expresses this idea, how careful we Yidden are even with how careful even the seemingly lesser Yidden are with mitzvahs. Another pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Kefela Harimon Rakoseich. Your temples or your cheeks are like a slice of pomegranate. So we dash in from that here and a number of other places in Shas. The word rakoseich is related to the word reik, which means empty. Even the seemingly empty Jews among you, Malayim mitzvahs kerimon, are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. So in other words, even the simple Yidin, you might think they don't have much in the way of Torah and mitzvahs, but nevertheless, they really are full of mitzvahs and they're careful with the mitzvahs that they know and the divrei chachamim that they know. Marsha points out there's more of that as well. The Kefela Harimon Rakosif is the second half of the Pasuk. The first half of the Pasuk goes to Chut HaShoni Sifsei Saich. Your lips are like a red crimson thread. Umidborech Nova. And your midborech, which can mean your speech or it can mean your behavior, is pleasant. And then it continues with the part that the Gemara quotes over here, Kefela Harimon Rakosif. So he explains that it means the red lips represent actually not the lips on the face, but the lips elsewhere in the body, which have to do with the halachas of taras and mishpacha. When there's red over there, then the couple know they're off limits to one another. But your speech is pleasant because the husband and wife still talk and they have a non-physical relationship, a relationship of talking and other such things at that time, and you have their behavior, the other meaning of minbarech, is proper. As we know, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that originally the Chachamim said a woman, for example, can't wear perfumes or cosmetics or jewelry or whatever during the time when she's nidah, because you don't want to attract the attention of her husband, and then Rabbi Akiva taught it's fine for her to do that. So therefore, even in a time like that, midbarech, her behavior and her demeanor and her deportment, nava is pleasant. And we can trust, again, we can trust that the husband and wife are not gonna be taken over by their taivus and come to do it and then come to be over. On the Isur Nidah, we see that Hashem trusts us, that the Chachamim trusts us to do that. Because again, kefela harim and rakosek. And the pasuk continues, actually, Marashah continues with the end of the pasuk as well. Mibad tzamose, your temples, your cheeks, are red, like a slice of pomegranate, behind your tzamose. The word tzamose has a couple of different meanings. It means braids, or it means a tichol, or whatever. But the word tzamose means, literally, to hold yourself back. It's the same shorosh as tzimtzum. So they mitzamtzem themselves, a Jewish couple are mitzamtzem, and they restrict and hold themselves back to not come to Dvar Aveira. So therefore, this pasuk really fits not just the words kefela harim and rakosek, but the entire pasuk, when you look at it, is actually hinting at this idea of nida and of the way the husband and wife hold themselves back and control their tivus during that time. Rav Zeira Amar Mehacha. Rav Zeira said, yeah, another pasuk that expresses this idea. When Yaakov comes to get the brachas from Yitzchak, disguised as Esav, so Yitzchak is suspicious, it seems to be a kofo Yaakov, etc. So by Yorach Asreach V'godav, he smelled the aroma of his garments. And he said that the Re'ereach Mi says that the aroma is like the aroma of Gan Eden, Kareach Sada Shabeuch HaShem. So on the face of it, it can't mean he's smelling. Rashi points out on the pasuk. I mean, he's wearing goat skins and he's wearing, they don't smell so good. And yet Yitzchak smells a smell of Gan Eden over there. So al tikri begodav ela boigdav. Don't read begodav that he smelled his clothing, but boigdav, his disloyal ones. Da'afilu boigdim shebehem yesh behem reyach. Even the disloyal Jews still have a fragrance of Torah and mitzvahs to them. So, and the idea is, again, that he's wearing, Marashah explains, this also connects with this matter of Dam Nidah. He's wearing Esav's clothing. You think of it, Esav used, and before that, Nimrod had used this clothing for hunting all the time. So it must have lots of blood stains on it. And nevertheless, Yitzchak didn't smell the smell of blood and wild animals on it. He smelled the smell of Gan Eden in it. And therefore, that symbolizes this idea that even in future generations, the Jews who are less loyal to Torah and Mitzvahs, nevertheless, they give a beautiful fragrance in the fact that they keep the halachas of Nidah, the halachas of Taras and Mishpacha. So, as far as the fact that we're calling, by the way, in the previous one, in the Shlokish's Zerusha, we're saying Rekonin, Malay, Mitzvahs, Kerim, and a number of Achronim deal in different angles with if they're full of Mitzvahs, how are they Rekonin? A few interesting answers, including that they're not doing the Mitzvahs. Lishma, nevertheless, they still have them, even if in a certain sense they're Rekonim of the true Teichen of them. Ben Yehoyada says you can have, for example, a person who himself is not particularly careful with Mitzvahs, but he inspires other people to do Mitzvahs. You find such things nowadays, for example, and in olden times as well. So in that sense, they're full of Mitzvahs that they help somebody else do Mitzvahs, even though they themselves may be empty of Mitzvahs themselves. And several others, so several of what?
Tomchei Torah,
basically, yeah. As far as this Burgdav, by the way, the Medrash brings in this connection, the Medrash on that pasuk and in Parshas Toldos, brings a couple of actual examples from the times in the years before the Nes Chanukah of two disloyal Jews, two Mesiavnim, who did amazing tshuva and died our Kiddush Hashem. One of them is a story that it tells over there that when the Greeks took over the Beis Hamikdash, they're going to loot all of its treasures. Who's going to go in first to start taking things from the Heichal? So they said a Jew, a Mesiavin, should go in first, either because they're afraid of being struck down by a Malach, or they figure it's a greater insult to Hashem that a Yid should. Whatever the case, they take a fellow named Yosef Meshisa. They tell him, go ahead. I think I've told the story before also in this year. They tell him, you go in first, whatever you see that catches your eye, you can keep for yourself, then the rest will take and bring down to Yochos and divide up and whatever. So he goes, the first thing that catches his eye is the menorah. He holds it out, they give a look at the menorah, totem, prochem, a kicker of gold, the whole nine yards. This isn't something that's suitable for a commoner or for a regular person. This we're going to bring down to Yochos. Go in again, they tell him, and take something. He says, no. They start trying to convince him, they start trying to bribe him, and eventually they start trying to threaten him. Well, why not? He says, I already angered the Eibishter once. You want me to do it again? This is a Mesiavin we're talking about, a guy who had the chutzpah to go in there the first time and then take out the menorah for the Greeks. The Medrash continues. They brought a couple of saw horses out, like you put boards on them to saw, and they started sawing him in half. And as they're sawing him and about to kill him, he's screaming out, "Oy to me that I angered my creator." And he died after Shem. That's one example the Medrash gives over there. The other one, the Medrash continues, is a story involving a nephew of Yosef ben Yezer, the Nasi that we have in Pirkei Avos, the past Shabbos. He had a nephew named Yochim Ish Tzroras, who was also a Misyavin. So the Medrash tells that Yosef ben Yezer was being taken out to be executed by the Greeks on a Shabbos. This nephew of his, this Yochim Ish Tzroras, comes there riding on a horse on Shabbos. And he sees that what they're doing, that they're about to execute his uncle. He says, look at that. Look at the, well, actually, what it is, Medrash says, like they have, he's being forced to carry a heavy beam, Yosef ben Yezer, that they're going to then take him and hang him on. So he says, your uncle, he says, you know, look at the horse that I'm riding on, and look at the quote-unquote horse that you got over there. So Yosef ben Yezer says to him the famous expression, if the Eibishter is rewarding those who violate his will so much, like you're getting, how much more so Hashem has reward for those who are listening to him, meaning like myself, and vice versa, if you have such punishment for the Oyster Ritzona, how much more so for the Oyster Ritzona. The Medrash says that had such an effect on this Yochim Ish Tzroras that he went home and he actually accomplished all four Mrs. Basin on himself. So then the Medrash finishes off that Yosef ben Yezer, as they're hanging him, as they're executing him, he sees Joachim's neshama going to Gan Eden. He says, he got there ahead of me.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to do.
Kind of hard to do all four misses, but whatever. You know, it can be arranged, but whatever. The point is, these are two actual examples that the Medrash gives of bogus, of Jews who were completely disloyal to Yiddishkeit, absolute misyavnim, and yet look what they did and how they died, Al-Kiddush Hashem. So the Gemara tells in this connection, speaking of a boygdov like this, there were these biryonim, these wild guys, it actually says in Lashon burim, in the Lashon that they're empty, of as we have in Pirkei Avos, it's telling Shabbos, in buri reichet, where a bur is somebody who not only doesn't know Torah, he's worse even than Amoretz, and Amoretz at least has midas Torah, so bur doesn't even have that. So these guys, they lived in Reb Zeira's neighborhood. To have a makarev lahu, and Reb Zeira would be makarev them. He would be friendly to them. On the hope that eventually him being friendly and trying to be makarev them will motivate them to do tshuva. And the chachamim were objecting to it. How you and you're dealing with these lowlifes. Leave well enough alone. Then when Reb Zeira passed away, Omru, these Viryonim said among themselves, Ad ha'idna have k'tina, or charicha k'tin, v'chorich shoki, until now, there was the short one with the burnt legs. They were referring to Reb Zeira. Reb Zeira was physically short, and the Gemara tells us a story in Bava Metzia, how one time he was doing a test on himself to see whether he's immune to the fires of Gehenna, and to make a long story short there, he got his legs burnt. So from then on, his nickname, we find in at least one place where the Chachamim gave him this nickname, Tina Chodesh Shoki. Here, these Biryonim also had the break kite to call him that. But in any case, so now they're saying among themselves, until now we had the short one with the burnt legs, they have a boy Alon Rachmi, who was davening for Rachmanus for us before Hashem. Kashta, now they think to themselves, Man boy Alon Rachmi, who's going to daven for us? The other Chachamim want nothing to do with us. So they started thinking tshuva in their heart, and eventually the attacker did tshuva. So it turned out that Abdera's hiruv to them didn't bear fruit while he was alive, but it did after he passed away. This is Vayora Hasureach B'Godav, that even these boygav, these empty people, they still were capable of having a hiruv tshuva later on. A couple of them first and deal with a point. So one point you can say over here, actually, though, so on the face of it, it comes out that certainly Reb Zeira's mahalach definitely bore fruit. On the other hand, there is a point that some of the make, in a way, maybe not. After all, maybe if Reb Zeira hadn't been the kind of them, maybe they would have said to begin with, you know what, nobody's on our side, maybe we better do tshuva now. So you could argue like that. Enough Yosef Taka deals with over here. You see from this that this is an example of Don't push away such people altogether. As we know, for example, Elisha pushed away Gehazi with both hands and other such examples. You got to be Yamin Mekarevas, a smell dercha, and you see that Abzeira did that, and Ataka had good effect. Especially, he goes on to say, Anaf Yosef says, B'durus Achroinim, we still, you know, in later times, and he's talking 150, 170 years ago in his own times, that we can't push away such people. We got to do everything we can to bring them closer. And a lot of Sam of Akamo, and in our times, we have many people, unfortunately, have people who are going off the derech, including even from families. We have to figure out ways to not push them away, but rather to work with them like Reb Zera did.
Reb Yehoshua ben
Parachi pushed away. So Ish with Pshtei Adayim. Yeah, we're gonna have both of those later in the Masechta. In fact, him and Elisha with Gehazi. Yeah. Okay. Onward. The Mishnah says, "Ketzed ma'ayin ase'edim al edin nefoshes." How would they scare the Edim who are coming for Edim Nefoshes? Now, in the previous parak, we talked about when Edim come for Dinim Mominus, we also want to scare them straight. In case they're planning to testify falsely, we want to warn them that what the consequences of it are going to be. And we went through, the Gemara had gone through a couple of possibilities. We warned them it might result in famine. Then we said that might not work. They might say, we'll manage. We warned them it'll cause a plague. They might say, nevertheless, okay, plague or not, people die in their expected time. And then we tell them that we appeal to their own sense of self-worth. You should realize that if you're testifying falsely, because, for example, somebody hired you to do so, even they are going to look down at you and think of you as lowlifes. So now, when it comes to Dinin Nefoshes, we need, on top of that, we need an even greater warning, because after all, Dinin Mominus, at least you can undo, Dinin Nefoshes you can't. So therefore, what kind of warning do we do then? Hoymachnisin oisam, so they would bring them into the basin, shtibel, omaimin aleihim. And they would give them warnings along the following lines. First of all, they would tell them, Shema toimru me'oimud umishmua. Now, maybe you might be giving your edus not based on what you actually saw, but based on assumption, as the Gemara is going to give an example involving the famous story of the Shimon Shotah, where you have reason to assume that this is actually what happened, but you didn't actually see it with your own eyes. Or by hearsay, Eid Mipiyed, where you heard it from other Eidim. And none of that will Mipiyed Adam Nemon, even if you heard it from a trustworthy person. None of that works. Eidus, by Dinim Mominus, there's a certain amount of leeway. In the previous Perek, the Gemara had talked about that, for example, Eidim for Dinim Mominus don't necessarily have to see Reuven lending Shimon the money. It's enough, for example, that Shimon gave a Hidah in their presence, knowing that they were the Eidim, that he owes X amount to Reuven. And that's good enough. But by Dinim Nefoshes, such things don't work. And Basin continues with them, Shema Iatim Yodim Shesefenu Libdek Eskem Vidurisho Vahakira, or you may be unaware that we're going to end up cross-examining you very carefully with Durisho Vahakira and asking you all kinds of questions. So Ion Yaakov points out, you know, like this, if they say, you know what, that's true, we didn't realize we're going to go through such a withering cross-examination, fine, we give up, we'll bow out of it, that saves Basin a lot of tircha, which is a good thing. Okay. Then they continue, Basin tells them, Hevu Yodim, you should be aware, Shaloika Dinim Mominus Dinim Nefoshes. That Dinim Mominus and Dinim Nefoshes are two very different things. Dinim Mominus, Adam Noisin Mominum Escapoloi. Dinim Mominus, let's say you did testify falsely and you cause that Reuven, for example, is paying Shimon money that he shouldn't. Fine. What happens when it turns out that you're lying? Fine. Let's say, if not so bad, then Shimon will return the money to Reuven. And therefore, that'll accomplish his kapara. Okay, we'll also have to ask mechila, but fine, at least it can be undone. Dinin Nefoshes, if it's Dinin Nefoshes and you're testifying falsely and causing that somebody is going to be killed when he's innocent, Domei v'damzar oisef tzluin v'ad sofa olam. Not only his blood, but the blood of all future descendants that he could have had till the end of the world are all hanging on you. They're all around your necks. In fact, Marsha points out an interesting nuance in this. When it comes to Mammon, for example, so let's say Adam testified falsely that, let's say, for example, they testified falsely that Shimon stole $100 from Reuven. Fine, so what turns out if it's false aiders? They're giving back $100. Now, we don't say, for example, well, during that time, Reuven could have invested that money, and maybe we should pay more, and we should consider the future consequences of it. We don't do that. They pay the exact amount, and that's that. As opposed to over here, we're taking into account not only the guy himself, whom they caused to be killed, but also all his future descendants, as if and the equivalent in Dinim Mominus would be to consider all the potential future value of that money. You don't do that, but by Dinim Nefoshes, you do. So therefore, that's a strong warning to them that to be aware of what you're getting yourselves into. So, and they continue, and then they continue, Shekein Matzinu B'Kayin, Shehor HaGasochi. We find exactly that when Kayin killed his brother, Hevel, Shenema, and the Pasuk says, Hashem tells him, Kol Dmei Achicha Tzeakim, the voice of your brother's bloods are crying out. What do you want in plural? Einem Dam Achicha, Ela Dmei Achicha, Domei V'Dam Zaroisam. Meaning, Hashem is telling Kayin, you don't you realize that the blood, not only of Hevel, who you just killed, but all the potential millions and billions of future descendants that he could have had is all crying out from the ground and demanding vengeance against you. The Mishnah continues, Dover Acha, another explanation, Dmei Achicha, why Dmei in the plural, Shai Domei Mushlach Ala Eitzim Ba'al Avonim, because as we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, Cain didn't know actually how to kill Hevel. So he's killing him and hitting him and wounding him in different places, and therefore the blood splattered all over different trees and different rocks. Or Maharsha points out that actually a piece of wood or a rock themselves that he hit him with. So therefore that's another reason for the word Dmei, because there's many different things that are spattered with the blood. Now the Yad Ramah says this is not part of what Beis Din tells the Edim. We want the Edim to be scared straight. What good is it going to do to tell them another pshetel in the pasuk? And they're going to say, well, that's what it means. Dmei achicha, and so therefore we don't have to worry so much about that it means future generations as well. On the other hand, the Rif over here says that, yeah, we do in fact include that as well, because again, it means every single place where there's blood is screaming out for vengeance against you, Kayin, you realize the same kind of thing. If you cause this guy to be killed, every place where there's any of his blood is going to be screaming out so that you deserve to be punished for that. The Mishnah continues, L'fichach nivra adam yichidi. This is why man was created alone. To teach you, anybody who destroys a single soul of the Jewish people, then Hashem counts it as though he destroyed an entire world, because there could have been an entire world that descends from the sky. And conversely, anybody who saves one Jewish life, then Hashem counts it, the Torah counts it for him as though he preserved an entire world for the same reason. Now, Maharsha brings over here that so what's the chiddush that man was created alone? He brings from Yefei Mara, one of the major Mepharshim on the Medrash, that all creatures were created only one. There was, for example, let's say there was one pair of cows that was created. There was one pair of horses that were created. V'chola. I don't know if everybody agrees to that, but this is how the Yefei Mara learns, and this is how Maharsha says. So what's the chiddush? But the difference is he says people are naturally social. So why would Hashem create one person, or even one couple by themselves, and they have nobody else to keep them company? And besides that, also, you think about it, later in the Masechta, it's going to talk about the famous thing. Well, where did Cain and Hevel find wives? They had to marry their own sisters, which is usually that would be Arias, but Chesed, who Hashem did a special Chesed for them. Whereas if Hashem had created several Adams and several Chavas, it wouldn't have been an issue. So therefore, that's what the Mishnah wants to tell us, that why not? Maharsha says, that was a bit of a doichek. No, when we say l'fichach nivra adam yichidi, means unlike all the other creatures where male and female were created at the same time, here, Adam was created first, and then Chava was created out of him. So why is that? Because why nivra adam yichidi? So now we're going to say, because even one single life, every single year, there's an image of Hashem. Now, there are actually different gersois in the Mishnah. What we have in front of us, and also in the printed Gemara, is Kolma Abed Nefesh Achas Mi'Yisrael, and Kolma Kayim Nefesh Achas Mi'Yisrael. And Maharsha explains, the idea would be, in other words, a goy is one thing, you know, obviously you can't go killing goyim willy-nilly, but it's not, you're killing one person, it's not considered Olam Mole. Only by a Yid would it be Olam Mole, because every Yid is so to speak a diyukin shom mokim. There's all an image of Hashem. Like we haven't picked it up. It's the chavim adam shenivu mitzalem. Chavim nisrael shenitin lam kli chemda. So therefore, the Jewish people are on a special level. With that said, there are gersois over here that have kolam akayim nefesh achas without the word nisrael, and then it would apply equally well to goyish alive, that killing one is considered like killing a whole world, and vice versa. In any case, we tell the Edim, therefore, that you should realize that that Adam was created individually. So you should know every single life of a Yid is precious, and you're thinking you can testify falsely on this guy and get him killed. You should realize, and with that, you're destroying a whole world. And the Mishnah continues, here's other reasons why Hashem created Adam by himself. And again, do we say all these reasons to the Edom? Again, the Yadramah says no. Again, that would blunt the force of what we're trying to tell them. On the other hand, a couple of the things that we're going to bring over here, the Rambam does bring in when he restates these halachas in Hilchos Sanhedrin, the Rambam does bring the end of it about that every person looks different in Bishvili Nivra Olam, because in other words, according to the Rambam, those also help reinforce to the Edom the importance of every single life, and don't think that you're going to get away with causing the sky to be killed when he doesn't deserve it. So the Mishnah continues. Another reason we're playing Shloim Abrius. Another reason is because so there should be peace between people. This way you can't have anybody say, my father, my ancestors are greater than your ancestors. We all have the same ancestor, Adam. And also, Mar Shah points out also, we're going to learn this in the Gemara actually, the idea is, for example, if there were many different people created to begin with, then in future generations, for example, tzaddikim could say, you know what, well, we trace our ancestry back to the original tzaddik, we don't have to work so hard on conquering our Yetzer Hara and being tzaddikim, we come by it naturally. And the Rishayim are going to say, well, we descend from Adosha, what do you want from us? Whereas we all come from Adam and Chava, then therefore nobody has any such excuses. But again, Maharsha points out this also fits with the point that it wasn't Adam and Chava together. If it was, then still some people might say, okay, well, Adam had one nature and Chava had a different nature, and I inherit my nature from Adam and I inherit my nature from Chava. Because you know how it is. Some kids take more after their father, some after their mother. But if Adam was the first one created all by himself, then there's no excuse for that.
Even for the
Goyim, yeah. Then the Mishnah continues. And another reason, so the Minim don't claim there are many different powers in heaven, and each one created their own person. And Maharsha says, again, that works even as far as Adam and Chava. If there had been man and woman created simultaneously, then the Minim would claim, well, there's one power that created the man and one power that created the woman. So like this, when only Adam was created himself by himself, and then Chava out of him, then that forestalls that whole argument. Then there's another reason why man was created alone. It tells us the greatness of Hashem. Now a person might stamp many different coins with the same die. And all of them look identical. You pull out a bunch of quarters from your pocket. They all look identical. Whereas the king of kings, Hashem, Tova Kol Adam, Bechois Mishal Adam Rishon, Hashem stamped every person with the die of Adam Rishon, because every person is born and every person inherits their genes from Adam Rishon. The Ein Echad Mehem Doim L'Chaveira, and not one person resembles another. So that shows that also, if you had many different men, and many different men and women were created to begin with, then you would say, okay, well, some of them take after one, and some take after the other, and it wouldn't highlight the greatness of Hashem. But like this, it does. And again, even if it was male and female separately, then you would still have that kind of thing. You could argue there's still different dyes to begin with. Like this, you have exactly one dye that everybody comes from, and everybody looks different. Because of this whole point. That every life is a world of its own, and that everyone is a separate machbeya of its own, and so forth. Because of this, every person is obligated to say, "Bishvili nivra olam." For my sake, the world was created. Meaning, Rashi says, a person has to think to himself, "I am very important to the working of the world. So why should I? I'm going to go and do an avera and cause myself to be kicked out of the world because of one avera." So that way, a person will hold him that way. It will motivate a person to hold himself back from doing averas, realizing that the whole world was created for his sake. Famous vort that's brought from Reb Simcha Bunim of Kshischa, that a person should have two pi. I think it's also brought in the name of the Kotzker, who, okay, was a Talmud of his. Anyway, what? That a person should have two pockets. That a person should have two notes in his two pockets. One note in one pocket should say B'shvili Nivra Olam, and the other one should say V'anoshi off of Afer. That's right. A person keeps in perspective. On the one hand, the whole world was created for me. On the other hand, what am I before the Avish to only offer V'Afer? So this way, it helps a person keep an even keel in this. In this connection is the famous vort of the Rambam that the Rebbe brought innumerable times in Sichas, that a person always has to consider the world chetzi chzakav chetzi chayev, and himself chetzi chayev chetzi zakai, and he does one mitzvah, he inclines the whole world to good, and so forth. So therefore, literally, b'shvili nivra olam, the whole world could have been created, that I have an opportunity to do this one mitzvah. In that connection, also, as I mentioned a few days ago in the Shir, a vote from one of the Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe, where if he was tempted to do an Aveira, he would say to himself, "Wait a minute, I'm a Chassid of the Alter Rebbe. I should go do such an Aveira. It's beneath my dignity." And he would hold himself fair. Yeah. So they say a similar thing about the Apter Rav. One time Rabbi Akiva Eger sends him a letter with a whole flowery salutation, Rash Kvahag, and so on and so forth. And the Apter goes and then takes it to this Medrash and reads it publicly in front of a chassidim. And he says, why? Because, same kind of thing. I had a Yetzirah trying to whisper in my ear to do such and such. But then I'm reading this letter in public. I talk and somebody that Rabbi Akiva Eger called in Ravan Shokol B'nei Agoyla should stoop so low? Not going to happen. So that's all part of the Bishvili Nivra Olam. Again, the Rambam does bring, even though the Yad Ramah says none of these things that we say to the Edim, just the first one, we say to them that Kolam Abin Nefesh Achas, V'Cholam Akayim Nefesh Achas, the rest of them is just the Mishnah is interjecting. By the way, you want to know other reasons why the Eivishter created Odom Yechidi, here are some other reasons for you, but not that we tell them to the Edim. The Rambam does bring this one about the Makdeus, and Vishvidi Nivra Olam, the Rambam does bring them in Hilchos Sanhedrin, so he understands that those are also things that you can tell the Edim to scare them off of testifying falsely and causing this unique Matveya to be destroyed. So we continue, then the Beis Din continues telling the Edim, V'shem atomru malonu l'tzara azois. At this point, you might be saying, well, what do we need this whole trouble? You know what, if it's true, if we're going to be in such trouble for testifying falsely, so fine, even if what we're saying is actually true, maybe we should just withdraw, maybe we'll just bow out of it. After all, the Pasuk says that when a person is an aid, and he saw it, or he knows of it, saw it in Dinin Nefashis, and then, or heard of it in Dinin Mominus, so if he doesn't say the aid wasn't based, and then the Pasuk is Venasa Avona, then he's going to bear his guilt. So in other words, you tell the aid, look, if you are testifying truthfully, not only you have nothing to worry about of these punishments, but also, look, the Torah is imposing on you the requirement to testify, and if not, then you're going to be in trouble for that alone. You can see your aiders, yeah. Still, though, you aid him, I'm going to say, why should we be guilty of this guy's blood? Still, fine, you know what? Okay, we'll be willing to take on ourselves the imlo yagin. Abi, we don't cause a fellow yid to die. No, we tell them, the Pasuk says, when the Rishoyim are destroyed, there is joy. So therefore, in other words, if the guy is Taka or Rosha, if he's guilty of the Savera, then you should know that you're not going to be held responsible for his death. On the contrary, there will be joy when he's removed from the world, and therefore you should go ahead and say your Eidus if it is truthful. Maharsha points out, in other words, so what we have is like this. The Pasuk in Lo Yagid and Nos Avoyne, how do you know it refers to Dinin Nefashis at all? Maybe it's only Dinin Mominus. Maybe by Dinin Nefashis, if they withhold their Eidus, then there's no punishment. Or there's no Aveda. That's why we have the second Pasuk, Avoyd Roshoy Mirna, which then that goes and tells us retroactively about the first Pasuk in Lo Yagid, that in fact it refers to both Dinin Nefashis and Dinin Mominus.
The
judges give this whole lecture to the Edim before the Edim are going to testify, yeah.
In every case
of Dinin Nefashis, yeah, because they have to make sure that they're this way in case the Edim are going to testify falsely, then hopefully this will dissuade them. Now, does it work every time? Not necessarily. We're going to learn in the next parak the famous story of Shimon and Shaddach and his son, where obviously they must have done that, it's part of the procedure, and it didn't work. It doesn't work every time, but, you know, at least normal people, hopefully, you know, who are not deliberately out with a vendetta to get the guy, then it'll scare him straight. Exactly that. If the guy's a Rosha, then you don't get a punishment for causing his death. When the Rosha is destroyed, then there's joy. I mean, there's also, you know, it's good for him as well, because that way it gets him his kapara in Gan Eden. We'll get to that in the next parak, but yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Now, the first thing we said was the Beis Din says to them, are you maybe saying you Eidus me Oymed? Are you saying it based on your evaluation of the facts rather than what you actually saw? So Kate said me Oymed, what does that mean that you're evaluating, that you're assuming the facts? Oymed Lahem, based in Tel Zaidim, Shema Kachri Isem, maybe what you saw was something like this. Sherotz Acha Chaveira Lechurba. Imagine you have Reuven running after Shimon into a ruined building where nobody else is present. Veratzim Achra, and you run in after him to catch him in the act. Omotzosim Sayif Biyadei, you find this drawn sword is in Reuven's hand, the Domi Metaftif, and blood is dripping, blood from Shimon is dripping off the sword. Vahorog Mefarfer, and the one who was just killed, Shimon, the victim, is writhing around and convulsively moving like people or animals do when they're in their death throes. But we tell them, im kachri isim, if that's what you saw, lo de isim klum, then what you saw doesn't count for anything. You have to see the actual murder itself, not even that you got in there a moment too late, even though the circumstantial evidence is so strong. That's not good enough for ages. And the Gemara says, Tani Milun Rabbeisa, Omer Shimon and Shatach, that Shimon and Shatach, who was the Nasi, actually the Yerushalmi, actually, now like this in Pirkei Avos, we have Yehudim and Tabai, the Shimon and Shatach, and whenever we have it, each of the Zugas over there, the first one is the Nasi, the second one is the Avestin. We find in some places, though, that Shimon and Shatach was actually the Nasi. The Yerushalmi says at some point they switched places. There's a story in Makkos, we'll get to it in a few months, Bez Hashem, or whatever, about where Yehuda ben Tabai wrongly judged some Edom Zomim, and the Yerushalmi explains, based on that story, Yehuda ben Tabai resigned his position as Nasi and took over as Av Beis Din instead, and Shimon Shatach became the Nasi.
They believe in circumstantial evidence?
In very Shalom, they often believe in circumstantial evidence, okay, you see, think of it, for example, fingerprints, DNA, all those are circumstantial evidence when you get down to it, Okay, so Tanya Omer Shimon Shatach, Ere Benachoma, may I see the comfort of the Jewish people, in other words, the coming of Mashiach. This is actually, it's a Loshen of a Shvua, and what he really means is the other way around, that if what I'm saying is not true, may I not see the Nechoma. But you don't want to say such a thing openly, so therefore he leaves out the word not. So Ere Benachoma, may I see the comfort of the Jewish people, in Loira Isi, if it's not true, meaning it's certainly true, that I saw Echa, exactly that, Echa Shirotzach Chavei L'Churba, one guy was running after another one, chasing him into a ruined building, V'ratzti Achav, and I ran after him, V'ra'isi Sayif B'yadei, and I saw a sword in his hand, the dummy metaftef, and there's blood dripping off the sword, V'horog Mefarfer, and the victim is lying there on the ground, writhing and moving around convulsively. Says Shimon Shatach, I said to the murderer, Rosha, mi horag lazeh. Look, who could have killed this guy? Oh yeah, ni ayata. Obviously, it had to be either me or you because nobody else is here. Tosfos points out that actually, when you get down to it, there must have been another aid together with Shimon Shatach as well. He's saying the only reason I can't bring you to Beis Din is because it's circumstantial evidence, but other than that, there were two aiding. So then there would have been somebody else with Shimon Shatach, but okay, Mitzvah had the covered of Shimon Shatach, we're not mentioning him. The Gemara mentions such a concept in other places, actually earlier in the Masechta, when they had the story of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava giving smicha to the five or six chachamim, then the Gemara had established over there that since smicha has to be given with three chachamim or more, then there must have been others with Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, but they're not as great as he is, and therefore didn't bother mentioning them. So Tosfos says the same thing over here. Anyway. So, Avo Ma'eseh, but Shimon Shatach continues to this guy, what can I do? She'en dom chomosu b'yodi. Your blood, your life, is not given over into my hands. Shari Oma Torah, al pish na'im edim yuma sames. The Torah says that you have to have two edim that actually saw the event took place, and only based on that, the person who deserves death can be executed. And here we don't have that, because I got in here a moment too late. However, Hayadea Machshavas, the Eivishter who knows people's thoughts, and he knows what you were thinking, Yipara Ma'eseh Shaharagas Chaveda. Hashem will punish that person, you, who killed a fellow Yid. Why does he use this expression, Yedea Machshavas? Marsha points out, after all, the guy could claim all kinds of excuses. He could claim, I didn't know he was a Yid, I didn't know, I only intended to give him a blow that wouldn't kill him, I didn't realize that accidentally it was going to hit him in another place in his body. There's a number of cases the Gemara deals with later in the Masechta. There's a number of cases where a person kills somebody else and he can be potter from Nissan, various grounds and technicalities like that. So Shimon Shatach says, you might think to make any such excuses, maybe you'd get away in front of an invasion, but the Eivishter knows the truth.
What was accomplished when he asked me to lie for
sale? So he's saying, like, rhetorically, who do you think? Who do you think killed this guy? Obviously, it wasn't me, so it had to be you. And the point is, he's saying Hashem will punish you. Omru, so the Chacham said, Laizazim Misham, they did not move from there, Ad Shabon Nochash V'Kishav Emes, before a snake came and bit this guy and killed him. So sure enough, he got what he deserved. However, the Gemara asks, "Hai ba nochasu? You're telling me this killer deserved to be killed by a snake? Rabbi Yosef, says, we also learn in a brayse from the yeshiva of Chizkiya, miyom shechora beis mikdash. Ever since the beis mikdash was destroyed, afal b'shabotla Sanhedrin, even though Sanhedrin is bottle and they can't do dinin nefashis anymore, dalad misses le bottle. Nevertheless, the four misses they sin are not bottle. The Gemara says, the fact is they are bottles, said the Sanhedrin is not giving them anymore. Tosfos deals with the fact we know that famously the Sanhedrin moved 40 years before the Churban, they moved out of Lishkas Agazis. The Gemara mentions this in the next parak. So it was 40 years before the Churban. So Tosfos says occasionally on special occasions they might return to the Lishkas Agazis, and it goes on to deal with, in some detail with why we're saying Mishachara based in English. Anyway, so what it means is Ela Din Dalad Mrs. Le Bottle. It means Hashem's judgment based on the four Mrs. Basin is not bottle even nowadays. Mishin is Chayv Skila. If a person is Chayv Skila, so what does Skila involve? As we're going to learn in a later Perek of Amos Efta, it involves first throwing the guy off a platform twice the height of a person, and if that doesn't kill him, then they throw a big rock on him. So, a nofum in a gag, so the corresponding thing, he falls off a roof, a chaya derastai, or an animal tramples him and knocks him down. So that's those are the equivalents of skila. Tosfos points out, by the way, I mean, we see many times people are chaya misses based in, and they don't suffer these fates. Tosfos says, first of all, they might do tshuva, second of all, the Eibishter might be planning to punish them in the next world, and there's another variety of different possibilities. Anyway, mishin is chaya Srefa, a person is chayiv Srefa, and what Srefa, as we're going to learn later in the Masechta, involves him swallowing hot lead. Or nofel b'dleika, either he pushes, gets burnt up in a fire. Or nachash makishoy, or a snake bites him, and the venom of the snake burns him up from the inside. Mishin is chayiv hariga, he's chayiv hereg, which involves having his head chopped off. Or nimsa l'malchus, either he gets handed over to the government, which in those days executed people by beheading. Or listim b'malav, where he gets attacked and killed by bandits, who also would kill people with swords. Mishin is chayiv chenek, and a person is chayiv chenek, which involves they would strangle him. Or teveya b'nar, either he drowns in a river, and then that cuts off his airway. Or mes b'srunchi, or he dies of srunchi, which is some kind of throat infection, which also blocks his airway. Anyway, the point is, here this guy that Shimon Shatach was confronting and accusing and killed another Yid. Now, the punishment for that is hereg, which should have that his head should be chopped off. So again, either he should be arrested by the government and beheaded, or he should be attacked by bandits. Where does a snake come in? The answer is Amri, ha'hu chetachliti ha'vavei. The answer is this guy was actually guilty of another Avera as well, which made him chayiv Srefa. The cases where a person is chayiv Srefa are various kinds of arayas. And we learn later in the Masechta, Mishin is chayiv shtei misses beisdin, a person is chayiv two misses beisdin, whether from the same act or different acts, nidin b'chamura, he gets judged with the stricter one. Now, it's machlokas later on in the Masechta, what the order of strictness of the misses beisdin is, skila srefa hereg chenek, or Rav Shimon holds srefa skila chenek hereg. Either way, though, srefa is definitely more serious than hereg, and therefore this guy got srefa, which is because he was chayiv something that he had also done something previously that made him chayiv srefa, and therefore that's what happened to him. So nowadays, if you see a person dies with one of these avamidas is based, then I don't know if you can necessarily draw any conclusions from it. Again, like Tosfos says, there are a lot of exceptions. Especially, you know, it might be that the Gemara is talking about primarily at a time when a lacoste was more visible in the world, you know, as opposed to nowadays. I don't know if it necessarily follows. Yom Yom Mashiach Gula Tesvav Sivan. The Rambam writes in Igeres Teiman, he's talking to the Jews of Yemen, they're having tremendous troubles over there, so he writes to help encourage them in their Yiddishkeit, and he tells them, even though you're not supposed to calculate kitzin of when Mashiach is going to come, he says, I'm going to tell you a Kabbalah that I have from my ancestors of when Nevuah is going to return to the Jewish people. And he goes on to say, Nevuah returning to the Jewish people is no question about it, as a prerequisite for Mashiach coming. And so the pasuk is, Nibu B'nechem B'nei Seichem. So the Rebbe talks about Nesicha, the famous Soya Sicha of Shoftim Nun Aleph, where the Rebbe was talking about Nevuah throughout the generations, that we have the Nevi'im of our generation, beginning from the Baal Shem Tov, who is as contemporary said about, and there was nobody like him from the time of the Rishonim, and there were the tremendous Pilei Ploys and Nisim that he and his Talmud, the Rav HaMagid, would do, that they could see Nesofa Olamad Sofa, the Sanhedrin writes this in Sefer Achkira, the light, the original light that the Eibishter created on the first day of Ma'aseh Bereishis was revealed to them, down to closer to our times, Novi Mekir B'chokamoni, the Ispashtus, the Moshe B'choldar B'dara, the Rabbeim of each of the generation, the Sheikh Tayach and the Yoyat Tayach of our generation, that are the Nevi'im. continuing with halachas of tzitzis. We were talking about, we learned last time that we were talking about the dinim of when you're allowed to take tzitzis off a beged. When not, we said if you're taking them off, not intending to put them on another beged, then you're taking the mitzvah off this beged for nothing. But we said if you're going to, so we said there are exceptions if you're planning to recut it so it doesn't have four corners, or you want to sell it to a goy, or you want to use it for tachrichim. So now the altar continues. All the more so, if you're taking off the tzitzis because you want to put on nice tzitzis on this beged, or because one of the strings got broken, and now you want to put ones that are whole, so even though the first ones are kosher, you're definitely allowed to take them off and put other ones, because then you're not taking away the mitzvah from the beged, then you're doing it in order to have better quality tzitzis on it, and that kind of thing is perfectly mutter. What you're going to do with the old tzitzis strings afterwards, you don't necessarily have to put them on another beged. You can then, in principle, by the way, later on we'll learn that in principle tzitzis strings in the ikra din can be thrown out, but the minig is to put them in shemus. Or actually the minig is often to use them for bookmarks. You sometimes see people doing that. But that we'll get to in a later simon. All right.